And now, reading and writing and radio.
Twin, Cordelia said with dignity, I find this dull and muddy-mettled rascal most tedious. Be gone, you scullion, said Ophelia. You Rampalian, you Fustularian, I'll tickle your catastrophe. Jimmy's mouth fell open. I cannot abide a gaping pig, Cordelia said. They started off again. Hey, wait, wait! Jimmy ran alongside them. A grin spread over his face. Hey, that's neat. Say some more. Why should we, you scullion, you Rampalian, you Fustularian? Ophelia repeated. Scullion! Jimmy's tone was admiring. Fustularian. Fustularian. Hey, that's neat. Wait till I try that on the guys at school. Hey, maybe girls aren't so bad after all. Where'd you get that neat stuff?
The author of that selection was Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host for the program is Jacqueline Jackson. And now here's Ken Ost.
Rhododendron.
Combustible.
Squash.
Schmaltz.
Fuss budget.
Asphyxiate.
Rolls Royce.
Whiskey.
Azure.
Oyster.
Lissom.
Smooch.
Astrobogulus. Now, the rest of them I know, Jackie, but that last one throws me a little bit. Is there really such a word as astrobogulus?
We came across that peculiar, remarkable word in a book called You English Words, a book about them by John Moore. And astrobogulus was right on the cover. And on the first page, he says that he came on this word in a biography of the last century or so, where one of the persons in the biography had been vilified by someone else, in other words, called names. And he said that the story was astrobogulus piffle from beginning to end. And then to go on with John Moore, utterly fascinated by astrobogulus, I sought it in all the dictionaries, but I could find no word bearing any resemblance to it. Dare I assume that it never existed before Mr. Newberg's indignation proclaimed it to the world? It is a splendid adjective, anyhow, though too powerful for everyday use.
Well, words are certainly fascinating things. There are many different kinds of words that tell different stories.
Yes, we can talk today some about words, but it is such a huge topic that we can only begin to scratch the surface of all the interesting things that there are to say about words. Well, one thing I'd like to say very early is that I think that there is a conspiracy to gyp children out of words. And I would like to protest that.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, people seem to think that there are some words that are too hard for children or too grown up for children. They cut them out of books because they're too hard to read, and they cut them out of speech because they're too hard to understand. And I think they also cut them out of books because to use a lot of bright and colorful words might make the book too long, and they assume that nobody wants to read a long book. Let me give you an example. We have several Mother Goose books. I like to collect Mother Goose, and there is one that has been rewritten for children, and they've taken the beautiful lyric of I saw a ship a-sailing, a-sailing on the sea, and oh, it was all laden with pretty things for thee. There were apples in the cabin and comfits in the hold. The sails were made of silk and the masts of beaten gold. Well, now that's a beautiful verse. And the version that we have has, I saw a ship a-sailing on the sea, and oh, it was all filled, instead of laden, with pretty things for me, instead of for thee. There were apples in the cabin and candy in the hold, and so forth. Comfits was taken out, candy was put in instead. The words that made that such a lovely verse have been taken out. Take, for instance, good old Peter Rabbit, that I hope all of you have heard as the Beatrix Potter version. At one point, Peter Rabbit is running away from Mr. McGregor, and he gets caught in a gooseberry net by the big brass buttons on his coat. And while Peter is struggling to get away from the gooseberry net, why, some sparrows fly up. And the line in Beatrix Potter is, they implored him to exert himself. Well, there are many rewritten versions of Peter Rabbit, and one that I have has the sparrows coming up to Peter, struggling in the gooseberry net, and saying, they begged him to hurry away. Well, now, why did they do this for little children? They obviously thought that implore and exert were words that a little child wouldn't understand. But are they really big words?
No.
They're just two-syllable words, just the same as hurry. And the meaning is quite different. If you were caught in a gooseberry net by the big brass buttons on your jacket and some sparrows flew up to you and begged you to hurry away, what would your reaction be? I think it would be, blast you, I can't. Can't you see that I'm caught?
Help me.
Yeah. Whereas, you see, it makes the sparrows be stupid. Whereas in the other, the sparrows perfectly understand Peter's dilemma, and they're imploring him to exert himself, to put on a little effort. And any child, I maintain, 2 years old and up, is going to get from the context of that story what those two lovely words mean, implore and exert.
That's how we learn words, I think, not as much by, at least in that period of our lives, not as much by looking them up in the dictionary as by seeing them in a context, and then we know what they mean.
Yes. Well, words are especially interesting to us as writers because these are, so to speak, the raw material of our trade. If we were a builder, we'd be using bricks, and if we were a baker, we'd be using flour. But if we're writing, we're using words. And, of course, one of the delightful things about words is that we have access to all of them. Nobody is going to say, oh, here's a great big box of words that you can't use. They are free. We can mm-hmm. use those words if we want
to.
It's
beautiful, really, yeah.
And it just seems so sad that so much writing is dull, when with the choice of the millions of words, it seems, that we have to choose from, the writing could be bright and interesting and fun. In Missing Melinda, the passage that we read for the opening, I had fun in that book by taking the Shakespearean words, Rampalian, Fustularian, and contrasting them to the children's ordinary colloquial speech. And this made both the colloquial speech and the Shakespearean speech much more interesting because they were sitting side by side. Words taste good. We have a record that we enjoy, a Carl Orff record, where there are children having fun with words. And one of our favorite passages is where they are naming various kinds of trees and flowers. And when we play that, notice how some of the words are smooth and glidey, pear tree, pear tree. And yet when the kids get to this section, blackthorn, buckthorn, hawthorn, poplar, all those words are rough, catchy words. You have to use your lips. You have to use your tongue. They don't slide out.
In a sense, they're explosive words.
Explosive yeah. words. And it finishes up, saxifrage, goldenrod, rose. And what is smoother and lovelier than the long word rose. But what a contrast to buckthorn.
Pear tree, pear tree, apple tree, apple tree, sycamore, sycamore, bramble bush, pear tree, pear tree, apple tree, apple tree, plane tree, plane tree, bramble bush, holly, laburnum,
crocus,
narcissus,
fritillary,
primulavera,
jasmine,
japonica,
walnut, sweet chestnut,
magnolia,
lobelia,
willow herb,
daffodil,
blackthorn, buckthorn, hawthorn, poplar,
deadly nightshade, winter heliotrope, saxifrage, goldenrod, rose.
James Thurber is an author that has lots of fun with words. In his book, The 13 Clocks, he has one of the villains say that, I'll slit you from your zatch to your guggle. And we don't know what the zatch and guggle is, but you can imagine, and you have the sense that it's a pretty long and devastating slit
that
you're going to get. Here is the King of Yarrow saying, "Weep for me, maiden," said the king, "for I am ludicrous and laughable with my foot caught in this trap. I am no longer ert, for I have lost my ersha." Now, you see, you never hear those words. You hear inertia, which means that you stand still, that something that isn't moving is in a state of inertia. But to call moving ert or ersha, the act of moving, it's that he's playing around and having fun with those words. We have another book that's a favorite of ours. It's a French book translated, and it's called Tintin. There's a series of these, and they're in comic book form. The captain, Captain Haddock, in the Tintin books, is a very colorful character, and his most colorful sort of speech is in his expletives. For instance, when he finds things going wrong, he says, "Blistering barnacles." And the worse things get, he adds things on until finally it becomes billions of bilious blue blistering barnacles in a thundering typhoon when he's really mad. And you have there a passage where the Arabs have just shot at him and he is angry and is chasing the Arabs.
He is quite angry and he's calling them things like swine, jellyfish, tramps, troglodytes, toffee noses, savages, Aztecs, toads, carpet sellers, iconoclasts, rats, ectoplasms, freshwater swabs, cannibals, bashy bazooks, caterpillars, cowards, baboons, parasites, and pockmarks.
There's some lovely words in there. I once went and looked up troglodytes and bashy bazooks because I thought they were made-up words, but they turned out to be perfectly good words. I won't tell you what they mean. You look them up yourself. Mm-hmm. Troglodyte, bashy bazook. They're good names to call your friends. But when we come to the area of made-up words, this is a thing that's fun to do in writing, too, as in zatch to guggle in Thurber, to make up your own words and to give them the meanings that you want. The other day, I quickly wrote down when one of my children came in to me and said, "I hate Megan, she's so yitchy and bliggy."
Those
and I thought,
good.
Marvelous, yitchy and bliggy. And so instead of going and finding out what Megan had been so yitchy and bliggy about, I grabbed my pencil and wrote that down. And someday I hope I'll use it in a book.
My mother used a word when I was a kid, but I find that it's fairly common at that. I think it's a made-up word. When things were all messed up, she would always say, "Things are all bollocksed up."
Bollocksed up.
And
that's terrific.
I don't believe bollocksed is a real word, but I have heard other people use it.
I think every family has family words.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them appear from nowhere. You can't tell where they came from. Other ones you take from a child that misuses a word or makes up a word. And here is an area that anybody that's writing has a private supply of special words that only he or his family knows the meaning of, and that he can share with the world.
And people will still know what they mean by the context again.
Yes.
Without having to look them up or anything.
Humpty Dumpty in Alice in Wonderland gives a discussion of the meaning of words. He's talking about how there's 364 days of the year that are your unbirthday and you don't get presents, and only one day of the year that's your birthday and you do get presents. And he is being nettled about this, and he says, "And only one for birthday presents, you know. There's glory for you." "I don't know what you mean by glory," Alice said. Humpty Dumpty smiled contemptuously. "Of course you don't, till I tell you. I meant, there's a nice knockdown argument for you." "But glory doesn't mean a nice knockdown argument," Alice objected. "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, "it means just what I choose it to mean, nothing more nor less." "The question is," said Alice, "whether you can make words mean different things." "The question is," said Humpty Dumpty, "which is to be master, that's all."
That's the easy way out for old Humpty there.
Well, it's an easy way out for an author, too. Lewis Carroll is the master of making words do what he wants them to do. He's got his whole famous poem of Jabberwocky.
Marvelous, yes.
It starts out, "'Twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves and the mome raths outgrabe." It doesn't matter what those words mean.
They're great.
"And in yitchy and bliggy, and I'll slit you from your zatch to your guggle," and words like that. We can make them up and we can do what we want with those words.
We do that for sounds, too. You mentioned the French a little while ago in a book that was translated. I remember seeing a Japanese book about dogs and cats and so on not too long ago. Now, in our comic strips and so on, we have dogs saying bow wow or maybe arf arf. Well, they don't really say bow wow or arf arf, but we use that as a convenient means of showing that a dog is barking. Well, this Japanese book had the dog barking, and it said ling ling. Now, you figure that one out, but that was their feeling on what to use.
In the Tintin books, when you look in the French versions, too, why Snowy isn't saying bow wow. I forget what the French version is, but they have something else for him saying bow wow. And it would be lots of fun, say, to collect how a dog says bow wow over the entire world
in
literature,
languages.
The way it's worked out.
Well, now, we have so many, many words, as you yourself mentioned earlier. How can we hope to make these our tools when there's so much to choose from, when we're writing, I mean?
Well, of course, in a long-range way, we should be alert to words all the time. When we hear an interesting word, "kali shangi," I heard the other day, and this means a rowdy fight or argument. It's a Scotch word. We should grab onto a word like that, onto astrobagulus, onto quacker wadger. Save these words, collect them, polish them up, savor them, and look for a chance to use them. As for writing right now, I'm sure that we all have a fund of interesting words in our minds that nobody has given us a word list for, saying you can only use these words and you can't use those words. There's no reason why in our writing we can't use more interesting words, not just the everyday run-of-the-mill words that we use. I'd suggest an exercise that a good many people have had fun with, which is to make a list of the 10 most beautiful words that you know. Now, I have such a list that a man made once and published it. He was a dictionary maker. Dawn, hush, lullaby, murmuring, tranquil, mist, luminous, chimes, golden, melody. Do you notice anything about those words?
They're all nice things.
I think that's it. He's not only taking the nice sound of the word, dawn, luminous, but he's taking the meaning, too. I don't think we need to limit ourselves to beautiful meanings as well as beautiful sounds. We might make a list of beautiful words with ugly meanings.
Trichinosis.
Yes, leprosy, hemophilia, all sorts of horrid diseases sound just lovely. Then you might make a list of words that you don't like the sounds of, ugly words. You can try taking a mood, a calm mood, for instance, and see if you can use calm words to create that calm mood, not only what you're saying, but how you're saying it, or angry. If you were writing an angry passage, you'd probably want to use short, sharp words, mm-hmm. like little bullets. You wouldn't want to use luminous, slow sort of words that would slow down your writing. You might try seeing if you can create a mood with the choice of words as well as what the words are meaning, the sound of the words in your writing. You might try looking in the dictionary for unusual words. Limericks have lots of play on words.
Well, they're marvelous.
You could use your hometown. There was a young man from Maquanago. And then go on from there to see what you can get to rhyme with Maquanago. You might have to take several words, or you might have to make up a word to rhyme with a town like Maquanago or Oconomowoc. That would be about as hard. So there are a lot of things that we can do with words. And I think that in the question of Alice, we could say, can you make a word do so many things? And my answer would be, it's not a question of can you, it's just who's to be the master.
Okay, Jackie, sounds like fun. I hope the authors, the young authors, let us know how they're getting along with words, what their favorites are, and whether they're old words or brand new, freshly made up words, either case.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.